The story you're about to hear on Love, Lust, Fear is true. Some names, places, and other identifying details may have changed to protect the storyteller. Love, Lust, Fear may contain graphic language and depictions of sensitive situations. Please listen with caution. Next on Love, Lust, Fear.
I was really at an exciting point in my career where it felt like anything was possible. When I saw his picture, I hesitated. There was something about him that I didn't fully trust, but there was something also very enticing about him as well. He went from being someone who was so supportive of me and encouraging of me and my career to someone who was telling me I wasn't good enough, I wasn't funny enough, I'll never amount to something. In the morning, he would snort Adderall, and then he would do work, have more Adderall, more coffee, whatever. And then at night he'd come home and he would drink himself stupid and then take Xanax to go to sleep. And then he'd repeat that cycle over and over and over again. And he's like cracking jokes, but I could see in his eyes, he's completely gone. And I'm sitting next to him and he's like, ha, 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 ha. And then he like slaps me across the face. Our lives have become so entangled. We were dating each other, but I was seeing him every day at work. We were working together and I didn't see a way out and I was miserable.
Once upon a time in Hollywood, as the Entourage era was winding down and the Me Too movement was heating up, Tinseltown remained the pulse of Southern California culture, cuisine, and comedy. Every day an influx of young hopefuls arrived, competing to make their mark in the entertainment industry. Among them was Gabby, a multifaceted talent who did it all, writing, hosting, acting, and stand-up comedy. At night, she fearlessly took to the stages of LA's comedy clubs, bearing her soul. She mined her dating life for material, sharing anecdotes of ill-advised choices and questionable suitors, reflecting her journey from serial monogamist to serial dater practically overnight. But when her dating life took a darker turn, Gabby found herself grappling with a reality far removed from the lighthearted material of her early routines. She found herself entangled in a toxic workplace showmance with a troubled comedian, a high-functioning addict and alcoholic, and she faced the stark realization that her romantic misadventures were no longer fodder for comedy.
I was in my like early to mid-20s, really living my best life in West Hollywood. I had a lot going on. I was kind of like Hannah Montana. I had different lives. So I had a life where I was working production as a coordinator on this show during the day. At night, I was really trying to be a stand-up comedian. And my weekends, I was working at a retail store. And I had started writing my book, 20 Guys You Date in Your 20s. I was really at an exciting point in my career where it felt like anything was possible. And then when I moved to Los Angeles, I started dating this guy who was older than me. And I was very much in love with him. I asked him how old he was on our first date. And he told me he was 35 before I ever kissed him. And I just never questioned it again. I thought he was the person that I was going to spend the rest of my life with, even though I was 23. We used to watch movies before going to bed at night. And so I was going to look through his iPad for a movie. It was passcode protected. And I asked him what the passcode was. And he said it was his birthday. And like, I know my own birthday, but when it comes to like dates, I'm just really bad at it. I didn't know his birthday. His wallet was on the nightstand. So I went to go get his ID to see his birthday, to open up the iPad. And when I looked at his birthday, I did the math and I realized that according to his driver's license, he was not 35 years old, but he was actually 45 years old and had been lying to me about his age this whole time. We dated for almost a year. That relationship really broke me. That relationship took me from this hopeless romantic who really believed that I was going to like have my happily ever after and really believed in love. And I kind of changed from someone who used to be a serial monogamist into a serial dater. And I very rarely had relationships after that that lasted more than a couple of months because of this experience. So after that breakup, dating apps came out. I was going on dates. I wasn't going on a lot of dates, but yeah, I probably went on like a date or talked to someone I met on a dating app like once every few weeks or so. So I was on Tinder when I matched with this guy. When I saw his picture, when he initially came up on my feed, I hesitated. Something about him, about his eyes or something, there was something about him that I didn't fully trust, but there was something also very enticing about him as well. And so I ended up matching with him and we ended up talking. And he had mentioned that he was going to be working on the show. When I found out that we would be working on a show together, and you know, this is a pretty small show. The whole production staff is probably about like under 100 people. And I just, you know, I knew that that was wrong. I was like, I don't want to date someone I work with. That's really problematic. And I just didn't want to jeopardize the good thing I had going on with my job or make things awkward because, you know, I also knowing my track record, knowing that, well, this will probably not last that long anyway. So I didn't really want to do that. So on Tinder, I end up saying to him, I don't feel it's appropriate that we should go on a date. I just don't really feel comfortable. I'm sure I'll see you at work, LOL. We ended up working together. We're not like working directly with each other all the time, but sometimes we would like interact. And it was always very friendly, but there was flirtation. And I could tell he was like into me, but I was kind of like, no, no, no. And kept like doing my own thing. We had only known we had a season of that show. So it wasn't really like, it was only like a couple of episodes. So we were on a hiatus. After that point, we finally were like, you know what? Clearly we like each other. Clearly there's a flirtation. Let's go get drinks. And after one of the last days of work, we went to go get drinks at a place near the studio. And I remember just like really liking him. And it was interesting too, because this is going to sound mean, but physically he wasn't really my type. He was a little shorter than me, if not my height. And I'm a taller girl. I'm 5'8". And I know that at that point in my life, height was really important to me because I wanted to wear my heels. And so him being like exactly my height wasn't really a turn on. I remember not like immediately being like physically attracted to him, but he was very smart, very quick, very funny. And we had one of those dates where it was just like constant banter back and forth. And I really felt like we connected and we had a good time. And I definitely ended up having more drinks than I wanted. But at the time, I didn't think too much about it. And also, I think in your early 20s, you don't really see like drinking as a red flag because you're coming from college where drinking is such a big part of the culture that when people are drinking after work, you're just like, oh, they just like to have a good time. So after that date, I went and I met up with friends and I had butterflies. I thought like we had a connection. Like I don't even think we kissed or anything like that at that point, but we started texting and he was blowing up my phone all the time, constantly texting me. And we were like in a very like textual relationship where it was like constant back and forth. I remember anytime my phone would chime, my like heart would race. I would be so happy. I would love, like, it was just such a great, like fun thing. And then that kind of slowly turned into dating and it would slowly turn into like us spending a lot of time together, like going out for drinks, going out for dinner. I had a roommate, he lived by himself. So I would spend a lot of time with him in his studio apartment. And we really became like fast friends and like fast partners. Like and it was nice because he was smart and funny that we could really like play off each other. And he started to be someone I would send jokes to, or I would show him things I was working on and he would give me feedback and I would help him with his stuff. The first night I slept over at his place, we went to sleep together and I woke up and he was gone. And, you know, it's a studio apartment. He wasn't in the apartment. I could see that. And I didn't know where he was. And I remember like texting my friend, be like, I don't know what to do. Like, this is so weird. Like, what should I do? And then like eventually in the morning, he came in and he was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I was doing the laundry in the basement and I fell asleep doing the laundry. And I'm like, that's weird, but was like, whatever. And also like every time we would hang out, there would always be alcohol. He'd always be drinking. When I first went to his place, and I'm like, oh, he must like have friends over a lot and he must party a lot. And that's why he has a handle of vodka. The only other times I've seen handles of vodka was at like frat parties or at like pre-gaming for the club. And then I think I like started noticing, I'm like, oh wow, he like goes through a handle of vodka like a week. And like, it's not just me, like sometimes it's just him. And so I think I started to notice that he might've had a little bit of a drinking problem. Then the show ended up getting picked up for another season. He went from being someone who was so supportive of me and encouraging of me and my career to someone who was telling me I wasn't good enough. I wasn't funny enough. I'll never amount to something. He then also little by little started to pick at my appearance. He started to call me fat. He started to pinch any fat over my jeans and tell me like, oh yeah, you know, if only you could tighten up a little bit. So it started to be a lot of like kind of like taking me down a peg, like little by little until I really felt dependent and codependent on this relationship. And I remember also when we were dating him being like, well, why have you never had a really serious relationship? There must be something wrong with you. And like, he was the first guy who like said to me, like, I want to marry you. Like, you're my wife. We should live together. Like all these things. I thought that this was all I deserved. And this is the person that I'm supposed to spend my life with, even though he treats me terribly. There would be these big grand gestures, and they usually came after a fight or just him doing something that didn't make me feel great about myself. And then the other thing too is he didn't have a car. This was like really before Uber was as big of a thing as it is today, like, but he would bike everywhere. And then later I found out that he had a car. I don't know if his license was suspended, but I think there was like a DUI situation. I started to learn that he was an alcoholic, and he was a very highly functioning alcoholic, but he was in denial about it. And that he also had a really scary pattern where in the morning he would snort Adderall, and then he would do work, have more Adderall, more coffee, whatever. And then at night he'd come home and he would drink himself stupid and then take Xanax to go to sleep. And then he'd repeat that cycle over and over and over again. Working on this show is a very high pressure show. And I started to see how it was like impacting his health. Also mood swings, like it was just not great to be with. We were now working together and we were now dating, and there was like no HR really, but everyone knew we were dating, and that was like a very obvious thing. And people thought we were like such a cute couple, and they really liked us because we were both kind of on the younger side of the people who worked on the show. And so everyone really liked us together. And it was also because he didn't drive. So like now it was almost every night I was staying at his place, and then I was driving us to work. And then even if I wasn't staying over, I was the one who was always driving us to work and driving him home. And I started becoming his driver, which I don't know how that happened. And then it started feeling like I was just taking care of him all the time. I really felt like I didn't deserve better than him. He also had put the pressure on me that like this job was so important to him, which I understood. I always knew that. And he was like, we can't break up. We have to still like be together at work, because he was worried that if we broke up, he would get fired, which I don't like, I didn't know how that would happen, but I just like believed him. So it was like really important that we like stayed together for work. Our lives had become so entangled. We were dating each other, but I was seeing him every day at work. We were working together, and I didn't see a way out. And I was miserable. I was so unhappy. I was a shell of myself. I had lost a lot of friends because of him. He tried to convince me that people who had been my friends since college were not my friends, and that they were jealous of me or whatnot, and that they weren't looking out for me. And the only one who was looking out for me was him. And if I stayed with him, he would make sure that I, you know, all the good things would happen to me and everything. We started to build this like very codependent relationship, and it was really bad. And, you know, it was really getting to a point where I felt so alone. My best friend from college was getting engaged, and obviously she didn't know she was getting engaged, but her fiance and her other friend had planned this thing. So basically she was getting engaged at like this time. And then after, we were all supposed to meet in like Hermosa, and I was so excited. I couldn't wait. And he was invited too, and he was so excited. And so the plan was, because we had to drive from Los Angeles to Hermosa, that I was going to go pick him up at 4 o'clock. We were going to drive to Hermosa together. And so I get there to pick him up, and he's like, come in, come upstairs. I come into his apartment, and he's so, so wasted. And he's hosting his own comedy show, I guess, to me. And he's like cracking jokes, but I could see in his eyes, he's completely gone. And he's like laughing, joking. And I'm sitting next to him, and he's like, ha, 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 ha. And then he like slaps me across the face. Like he flings his hand, and it literally slaps me across the face. It didn't show a mark. There was no mark. But it hurt enough that my ears were ringing, and I was in such shock, and he immediately profusely apologized. I couldn't believe it happened, but I had to get to my friend's engagement party. So I just left and I went to the party by myself, and my friend's friend could tell something was up, but I didn't want to make a big deal out of it. And then there was another time where we were joking around in bed, and he kicked me like really hard off his bed, and I fell on my elbow. And I remember I had to go to the medic on set. I had to get a sling from the medic because my elbow was all fucked up from that. I saw his phone, and there was a text on his phone, and it said, I can't tonight, I have my period. And I, of course, was like, what is this? Who's texting you that? And he had finally admitted that it was someone from a dating app, but that it wasn't sex. They were not having sex. She was going to send him naked pictures. Like, that was better somehow. I really felt very trapped in this relationship. Sometimes people in your lives, they come into your lives at the right time and they're there for the right reason. And I had met these new friends. One of the friends was my friend who got engaged, her other friend who also was living in LA and also doing similar things. And so we had started to form a sketch group with me, her, and this other girl. And both of them had been in toxic relationships. And so when I was telling them what I was dealing with and how I didn't know what to do, they knew right away. They're like, you have to get out of this. I had tried to get out of this relationship. I had tried to break up with him so many times leading up to this, and it never stuck because we worked together. I remember sitting on a bench and breaking up with him and saying to him, yeah, this isn't working. I'm not happy. Like, I can't do this anymore. Like, this is over. We're done. And he said to me, you know, I can't wait until you turn 30 and realize you aren't funny or something like that. Finally, these new friends, I remember it was the day before Valentine's Day. They helped me get out of the relationship and stay out of the relationship. They both went through my phone. They blocked him and also like hid his contacts so I could never find him. So I couldn't text him and he couldn't text me. They went through my computer. They got him off my GChat, like everything. Because at this time, that's like how you communicated mostly was GChat. And especially because we worked together. But then of course it was hard because we were broken up. But we were at work and that it was okay that we weren't together anymore. But it was very important to him that it made it seem like we were fine. And that even though we were broken up, we were being professional and there were no issues. And he would do things to make that very difficult. Bring different girls every night to the tapings of the show. Like flaunt that he was dating other people in front of my face. He really went out of his way to make me feel like crap and to make it really hurt. And I tried my best to like ignore it and just stay focused. Until one night, it was a tape day, it was a show day. So I had my walkie in one ear, the landline in one ear, on my computer, and I was helping, like there was some last minute thing that I was dealing with, I can't remember exactly, but I was on my computer, and he came up to me while I was doing this, and he goes, hi. He's like waving at me, he's like, can I have your charger? And my charger was plugged into my computer. And I'm like, what? He's like, your charger. And then he just went, and he went and grabbed the charger out of my computer. And as he grabbed the charger out of my computer, I had hot tea next to my computer, and pulling it out, the hot tea spilled all over my keyboard on my laptop. And I screamed because a couple of days prior to this, my car got sideswiped by a bulldozer. So like him like messing up my computer after that just happened, my car, I like couldn't be nice anymore. I couldn't hold it in. And I screamed. I was like, fuck you. Oh my God, fuck. I can't fucking believe this. And he ran away. So my boss's boss, who was always looking out for me and such a sweet guy, he had me go into his office and I was like, it's nothing. I overreacted. I'm so sorry. Like, no, everything's fine. He was just like, look, Gabby, like I know you guys aren't dating anymore. What's going on? You can tell us. And I was like, I really don't want to say anything because I don't want him to get in trouble. I don't want him to lose his job. And he's like, I understand that. But if he's doing something that he's not supposed to be doing, if he's creating problems, and also, by the way, just so you know, you're not the only person that has had problems with him. He's been rude to PAs. He's been mean to like other people on set. So it's not just you. There is a problem here. And if he's doing something, you need to let us know what's going on. And I said, to be honest with you, the biggest reason why I don't want to say anything is because when we were dating and we were in love, he was physically abusive. And if he was doing that to me when we were together, what will he do to me if he thinks I am the reason he no longer has his dream job? And they were like, yeah, we understand. And they ended up like doing what they could to protect me. And so they didn't fire him. They put him on probation for a week. Right after they told him he was on probation, every time I was at work, there was a security guard that was by me because they were worried that he was going to try to come in to work and hurt me. And that they also put me in a hotel like the first couple of days of the probation to like keep me safe, which was great. And I'm so grateful that they did that and they took those steps. But it also was like such a scary time. I remember like anytime I would, like I was always looking out for him. I was always scared that he was going to come up to me. I didn't speak to him after that, like at all. That was the last time we spoke to each other. And I was terrified. While he was on probation, the network had every single person, every staff member had to go in and talk to the network's lawyers and talk about their relationship with him and what he was like on set and everything. And then for me, I sent them like anything I had on my end that was like incriminating, but then obviously he also sent everything on his end that was incriminating. So they were like going through like our text messages from when we were dating and we were in love and like going through our G chats, everything. And like, and when I say G chat, like this was my personal Gmail account. Cause like there wasn't, I didn't have like a, at, you know, the show, like this is my personal Gmail account. So I had to go through all my personal Gmails, all of it. And it was like so embarrassing to like have to like relive the trauma of the relationship. And not only like the trauma of the relationship, but like imagine having to read through all of the text messages you ever sent with someone that you were dating. Like there was really personal, personal stuff that had to be exposed. And like, I'm sure I wasn't the perfect victim. Like, yeah, there were instances where you would look at my stuff and you're like, well, you know, she knew he was terrible, but she's still dating him. And it's like, this is really, I think, why a lot of women don't come forward in situations where they're being abused or they're getting out of a relationship and why they don't file things. Sometimes things aren't black and white. And it was just the worst. It was the worst month, the worst year of my life. I'm still in Los Angeles. I'm happily married. I have a cat named Owen, who I'm so in love with. I'm also very in love with my husband, but you know, cat, cuter. And both my husband and I are just pursuing our dreams and working. And people tell me I'm funny, which is great. And I'm now a published author. So yeah, I've come a long way from the girl who didn't think she could amount to anything and thought that she had no other choice than to stay in a toxic relationship.
When Gabby and I spoke, I wanted to know how this experience changed her perspectives on what relationships look like.
That relationship messed me up. That abusive relationship did not look like what I thought abusive relationships looked like. When you think of an abusive relationship, you think, oh, it's the black eye covering it up with concealer. It's the yelling, it's the fights, clearly abuse. Like you don't think about the mental abuse and you don't think that it, when it is physical, even though in both cases, you could argue that the physical abuse in the relationship were accidents and they were jokes, but were they? That's a chapter in my book. That was a chapter that I almost didn't include in my book because I wanted to keep the book light, but I had a talk with my editor about it. And she's like, I think you should include it because I think it's important. It's a part of your story. And also it's unfortunately a reality that a lot of women, men, everyone faces when dating. Yeah, you know, the book is all about things I wish I knew. And I think that that's a big one.
And what does safety and security in a relationship look like to her now?
So here's an interesting thing is I had this epiphany about what security looked like and what a healthy relationship looked like. This took me a while to realize it. Everyone always would be quick to assume, okay, someone who's dated 20 guys in their 20s, you know, must have daddy issues. And that's the opposite. I'm an only child. My dad is my best friend. My dad knows about all of the guys I dated. I talk to my dad every single day. I have a great relationship with my dad. But when I was 6 years old, my mom was diagnosed with cancer. And my dad saved her life. He found the one doctor that could cure her cancer. And so they have a very codependent relationship on that end. My dad spent a majority of his marriage and his life taking care of my mother, and still to this day is taking care of my mother. I think I got from that in terms of security, I think I had an interesting childhood in the sense that, yes, I had a great relationship with my dad, but my mother always came first. And there could never be anything wrong with me. So if I was sad, it didn't matter. It was, I didn't have cancer. I didn't survive cancer. You know, my mom was always the most important person because she was a miracle and her life was saved. And of course, like my mom would show me how much she loved me. I realized I have a very toxic relationship with my mother. My mother and I do not get along. And she did all the things, gaslighting, love bombing, like all those things my mother did to me growing up. She has been diagnosed bipolar, I don't think diagnosed as a narcissist, but I had this epiphany about my mother after that last relationship. I would attract these relationships that were unhealthy relationships because it mimicked the relationship I had with my mother and I was able to tolerate it. They would be attracted to me because when they were having their outburst or when they were having a panic attack or when they were doing something, like I was so calm and I was a rock because that's what I saw my dad do. And that's how I was around my mother growing up.
I also wanted to know how much perception played a role in how she's had to navigate through her career and what boundaries she's had to reestablish between work and personal life.
Well, I think it's that belief of, you know, sleeping your way to the top. And I think that that's a big thing as a woman in Hollywood, specifically when I was working in comedy, I always tried to downplay my looks because of that. And I would do that because I wanted people to take me seriously. And I have glasses. I don't need glasses. I need it for distance. I don't need to be wearing glasses 24/7. And early in my career, early when I moved out in Hollywood, I wore glasses all the time. I wore that kind of like a shield to protect me in a way and also to be taken seriously, because I never wanted people to believe that I was where I was because of who I dated. And I really was really careful about that, which was a big reason why I didn't want to date this guy originally. But, you know, people will believe what they believe. When I met my husband, he's like the first guy I really dated that really wasn't in my industry at all. A big boundary of mine, a lot to do with this relationship I just told you about. I want to keep my work separate from my partner's work. I'll cheer you on from the sidelines and I'm there for you, but I don't want to be working with you, and I don't want to be working for your business and give up my thing for your thing, nor do I want you to do the same for me. I feel bad for my husband because I feel like he wishes that I would work more with him, but I also feel like I need to establish that boundary because I just know it's like not good for me.
And finally, any advice for those searching for support in a toxic workplace?
So I would say first, try to find someone who can do something about it or help you, someone that you trust that you could open up to and you could tell them about the situation. I have the relationship that I had with that boss who pulled me aside and asked me what was going on. I had trusted him. Like, I really trusted him. I really felt in my heart of hearts that he was looking out for me and that he was going to protect me. So I think it's important to have that. If you don't have that, then I think the next thing to do would be to try to get advice from someone who has been through a situation like this, maybe finding them through the internet or through social media and asking them what advice they have.
Gabby revealed the truth about her obstacles as a woman in the fiercely competitive male-dominated comedy scene. She had to tone down her appearance, avoid challenging the skills of her male peers, and keep plenty of dark secrets, including the silent sacrifices she made to protect herself from her ex-partner and later shield his reputation at work. Her relationship gradually devolved to the point where she found herself responsible for rescuing him from his destructive tendencies, putting her safety and career in jeopardy. And when she came forward, she was judged, had her choices questioned, and then was made to feel like she wasn't the perfect victim. It's an unfortunate reality that underscores why so many women hesitate to come forward about their experiences of abuse. Gabby was fortunate that she had supportive friends and employers looking out for her. But she also sought another way to deal with her trauma and gain further support. As cliche as the phrase may be, Gabby turned tragedy into triumph. She dug into her past through the good, bad, and ugly to write a book that captures some truly revealing dating tales, some good and others with a toxic twist. And even though her ex called her unfunny, it sounds like Gabby got the last laugh. Until next time, I'm Jake Deptula. And this is Love, Lust, Fear. Every guest featured on Love, Lust, Fear selects a charity or organization to share. Please check the show notes on this episode for more details. If you or someone you know is being abused by a partner, there is help available. The National Domestic Violence Hotline provides essential tools and support to help survivors of domestic violence. Just call 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Or you can text START to 88788. If you'd like to be a guest on Love, Lust, Fear and share your personal dating and relationship story, you can email us at lovelustfearpod@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram at lovelustfearpod. Disclaimer: the information shared on this podcast should not be considered as professional advice or a substitute for seeking professional advice.